This time I thought I would go into more of the background with Romans and give some of the background so that when we get to Peter and the 12, and especially the Apostle Paul, we'll really appreciate Paul's new and unique position. He seemingly almost seems to drop in out of the blue in the middle of Acts, and a lot of people miss the significance of that. And so what I thought I'd do is spend the next couple weeks looking at Israel's program, giving an overview of what Israel's program looked like, so that when we get to Paul, we'll really appreciate how new and unique his ministry is as we enter into Romans. So what I'm going to do is I put up a timeline here. Now, I have to confess, I didn't come up with this. This is way nicer than anything I could have come up with. But it kind of gives all the specifics. I'm just going to leave this up and refer to it over the next few weeks. There's three things we want to really become familiar with in Israel's program. And luckily, our job is easier than it was because John has already done a series on some of these things. One of the ones we're going to look at, the five courses of punishment, Leviticus 26, and John's already has a series. I'm just going to bring it back to our memories, bring it up in our thoughts a little. If you want a lot more detail and more of the references and more of the information, then I'd highly recommend going back, reviewing John's series. So that's one thing we're going to look at, the courses of punishment, what I'm going to call Israel under the Mosaic Law. But there's something that, you know, gets overlooked a lot. A lot of people talk about Israel under the Mosaic Law. You say the word Israel, and you automatically say Mosaic Law, basically. Well, there was a time that Israel wasn't in a law system. You know, when Paul talks about the law, he makes a big point of this in Romans, where he says that from Abraham to Moses, there wasn't a law system in place. And I'm not going to go all the way back to Abraham, but we are going to go back to Moses and look at a time, a brief time period, when Israel was with Moses, but not under or in a law system. And that was from the Exodus to Mount Sinai, that trip through the wilderness. And we're going to take a look at that and see something about that will be very informative when it comes to Paul's epistles. Then lastly, we're going to look at the Davidic covenant. Both Paul and Peter, their very first sermons in Acts, that are recorded anyway for us in Acts, both begin with the Davidic covenant. So we need to really understand some things about the Davidic covenant, what that meant in Israel's historical scheme. Now, does anyone notice anything missing from here? The dispensation of grace is not on this chart yet. We haven't gotten to that yet. It would normally be in here, but right now we're just going to focus on Israel's system, Israel's program, Israel's time schedule. So let's begin. Let's look back to Exodus, and let's get an idea of the time when Israel was with Moses, but not in a law system yet, before the Mosaic Law was given to Moses and to Israel. So let's go flip back to Exodus 3. And of course, we all know this story really well, so I'm going to start by reading some passages at the beginning, and I'm going to read some passages at the end, but then on the trip through, we're just going to hit some of the highlights, and they're things that everybody in here already knows, and we're just going to bring it out from a highlight standpoint. But let's get the groundwork here. So Exodus chapter 3, verse 1. Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the mountain of God, even to Horeb. The verses I want are starting verse 8, but I want us to get the framework here. Moses has been rejected by his brethren. He's out keeping sheep with his father-in-law's sheep. And now he's going to run into the burning bush, which we're all familiar with. And he's watching Jethro's sheep. Jethro is his father-in-law. Now that's important. Keep Jethro in mind, because today we're going to begin with Jethro and we're going to end with Jethro. So just keep that in mind, because we're coming back to Jethro when we get through these few chapters here. But he's keeping his father's sheep. He's got the fire, the burning bush. God's ready to commission him to bring Israel out of the land of Egypt. and he's ready to fulfill that promise he made to Abraham hundreds of years before. So now let's go down to verse 8. And this is really the verses I wanted to get to. Moses now is commissioned, and he brings up a lot of good points, but there's two in specific that are very important for what's going to happen to them at the Exodus. Verse 8, "And I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians," this is God speaking, "and to bring them up out of that land unto a good land and a large land, and a land flowing with milk and honey, unto a place of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites," and it continues down. And the idea is here, he's ready to deliver them out of Egypt and take them to their own land, establish them in their own land to make them a nation. And, of course, the end goal of Israel's program is that Israel would be the head of the nations rather than the tail, and a light to the Gentiles, and blessings would flow to the Gentiles through Israel and her rise. I'll go down to verse 13. "And Moses said unto God," now we're going to get one of the concerns Moses has, and this is going to be one of the keys for going to Sinai. "And Moses said unto God, Behold, when I come unto the children of Israel, and shall say unto them, The God of your fathers has sent me unto you, and they shall say to me, What is his name? What shall I say unto them?" So Moses says, I'm going to go back to the Israelites and do what you say, but they're going to ask me, Who sent me? Who is the one that is sending me? And this is God's answer. "And God said to Moses, I am that I am." So he has two responses here. One to Moses is going to be to Moses, and one is going to be to the Israelites. To Moses, he says, I am that I am. And that refers to his timelessness. Time has no impact on him fulfilling his promises. His promise to Abraham hundreds of years before that he would bring the Israelites out of Egypt is now ready to be fulfilled. And then let's read on. "And he said, Thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel." Now here is the name he wants to give to the children of Israel. I am. I am hath sent me. That's what he's supposed to tell them. I am. Now if I come up to you and say, I am, what's your response going to be? You're going to probably have a furrowed brow and say, you are what, right? I mean, that's kind of an incomplete thought. I am sick, I am cold, you expect some other word to be on the other end of that. And that's the whole point with this name. It's like God is handing the Israelites, he wanted the Israelites to know that I am, and then there's a blank. You fill in whatever you want my name to be. I will do anything for you that you need me to do. And so we'll start looking at two systems. This I am name is going to be critically important. All the lessons they're going to get all the way to Sinai have to do with this I am name and God's desire that they would put whatever they need on that blank. So let's just take a few examples. If they need food, he will be their provider. If they need a deliverance from the enemies, he will be their deliverer. God is giving them grace resident in his Jehovah name so that he can make them into the people he wants them to be. So the first word we want to find here associated with this name is grace, and it's I am, and then there's a blank. Now, God gives a lot of examples of how to fill this in. These are the Jehovah compound names. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of them, but most people narrow them down to seven. And so I'm just going to read out a couple examples of the kind of things God wants Israel to put on that blank. Jehovah Jireh, remember he told that to Abraham. The Lord will provide, or in our terms, I will provide. I will be your provider. Jehovah Rapha, the Lord that healeth. That's going to come up in our Exodus account. I will be your healer. Jehovah Nissi, the Lord your banner. That's like a conquering hero. You know, when you go into war, you go under a banner, your leader's banner. And Jehovah, I am, wants to be their leader and lead them into battle and be their hero, their conquering victor. Jehovah Shalom, the Lord our peace. That's the only way Israel's going to get peace, is by their Jehovah God being their peace. Jehovah Raha, the Lord my shepherd. He wants to be the one to shepherd them. I am your shepherd. And he also says, I am your righteousness. And the one I like most is Jehovah Shema, which means Jehovah is there. He wants to be right in the midst of them, right with them. He wants to walk among them. And all of this is from the grace residence in his Jehovah I Am name. Jehovah is telling the Israelites, I want to be and to do whatever you need done to make you into the people I created and designed you to be. So that's the first thing, the I Am name. Now he's going to bring up a second thing. Flip over to beginning of chapter 4. Beginning of chapter 4. And Moses has a second concern, or a second concern about what he should tell the people. And Moses answered and said, but behold, they will not believe me, nor hearken unto my voice, for they will say, the Lord hath not appeared unto me. And the Lord said unto him, what is in thine hand? And he said, a rod. And he said, cast it on the ground. And he cast it on the ground, and it became a serpent. And Moses fled before it. And the Lord said unto Moses, put forth thine hand and take it by the tail. And he put forth his hand and caught it, and it became a rod in his hands. So here we have introduced and given to Moses and the Israelites, it's called in other places, the rod of God. And the thing we want to keep in our mind, because the rod of God is going to show up all the way as we're heading to Sinai. And verse 5, why is God giving them this rod? Verse 5, that they may believe that the Lord God of their fathers and God of Abraham and God of Isaac and God of Jacob hath appeared unto thee. And so there's a belief concept. I'm going to add two more words to the rod. It's the rod of God of faith. The rod of God of faith. So we have God giving them right at the start, right at the commissioning of Moses, he is saying, I want to establish a relationship with you based on a grace, a system of grace and faith. That's how he wants to relate with them. That is going to be the only way they can become the people of God. That's the only way they're going to be able to carry out their function that God created them for. Okay, so keeping that in mind, we're going to skip ahead now. We're not going to deal with the plagues and Pharaoh and all that. Everybody knows what happened there pretty well. We're going to go right to the last day when they put the blood on the doorposts. The angel of death comes through. The firstborn of the Egyptians are killed, and the Israelites are spared and passed over. And now God says, it's time. Let's go. And so they go out in the wilderness, and they're walking through, and they come to the Red Sea. Now, can't you just imagine some of them said, well, we can't go that way. So they turned around to go the other way, and they see the army of Pharaoh coming towards them. And it's important to get this picture in your mind, because this is another test. God is going to over and over and over again, all the way to Sinai, put the Israelites through these tests, put them in predicaments that they can't get out of themselves. And the whole idea is, if they can't get out of themselves, they need to fall on, resort to, rely on his Jehovah name. They need somebody to conquer their enemies. He will be their conqueror, rather than them trying to conquer them himself, because they couldn't do it on their own. You remember, God is present with them at this time. Remember, there's a pillar of cloud during the day and a pillar of fire at night so that they might have light. And he's leading them. So he's there present. He's ready to do whatever they need him to do. And what do the Israelites do? They murmur. They complain, they rebel. And what do they want to do? They want to leave God's plan and purposes and go back to Egypt. Sometimes if the consequences weren't so dire, I find some of these kind of humorous, because their argument is at least they have graves in Egypt, and rather than die out in the wilderness without graves. That is the flesh response that they are going to constantly give as God tries to train them to rely on his Jehovah name and let him be whatever they want him to be. And so what does Moses tell him to do? He doesn't tell him get in a law system or anything like that. He says, fear not, stand still, and watch the salvation of the Lord. And so right before their eyes, Moses holds out the rod of God of faith, and the waters part, the ground congeals, they pass through, the Egyptians come through, and they're swallowed up by the waves and killed, and you know, their souls go into the pit, and the bodies are washed ashore on the next day. So this is a great image for these Israelites. This is part of their training program as God is bringing them out, that he wants them in this grace-faith system whereby they're going to run into predicaments that they can't get out of themselves, and they need to learn to rely on him and use the grace resonant in his Jehovah name. And that's what we're going to have lessons over and over again. They're now over on the other side. They're on the safe side of the Red Sea. The Egyptians are gone. They got swallowed up. And the first thing they run into is they run out of water. And so now after just witnessing the salvation that they just witnessed from the Lord, you'd think, except we all know how fleshly we are, right, and what sinners we are, you think at this point they say, I'm going to go to the Lord for water. But instead they rebel. They want to leave God's plan and purposes and go back to Egypt. I think John also did this with the Battle of the Cross, where there's a lot more in this Egypt thing. The battle here isn't just Pharaoh's armies and the Israelites. The battle here is also things behind Pharaoh, these gods that are over the other nations, small g, and the adversary himself, Satan. And all that's going on there. And they would rather go back to that than to stay in God's program. It's almost as if God doesn't even look at it. And he says, okay, I'll give you water. And he heals the water, and they drink. We have another amazing thing about grace is he could have just healed the water and let them drink. He also then encamped them at a spot with 12 springs of water. So that's grace. Grace is superabounding blessings because God is doing them. And so now we've had two lessons. We've had the Egyptians' deliverance, and then we had the healed water. And those are two examples, the positive examples of God working, trying to train Israel to work within his I Am name and the grace resonant in that. Now he's going to give a little bit of a different exercise. He's going to go to chapter 2, just get a glimpse of another system. God's now going to say, in the midst of this, he's going to say, if they obey my voice, if they do my commandments, then I will not put the plagues of the Egyptians on them. You remember that from chapter 15? If they obey my voice, then I won't put the plagues on them. Of course, the corollary is if they don't obey his voice, he would put the diseases of the Egyptians on them. So God is now going to give the Israelites a negative example. And now he's going to show them something about how a law works system works. Here he's been training them and wants them to enter into a grace-faith relationship with him. And now he's going to show them why they should never, ever, even for a minute, consider going into a law works system. And what's interesting, that when he says that, if you shall, and I'm off the top of my head, if you do my commandments and hear my voice and listen to me and obey me, then I won't put the plagues on you. That is going to be the exact same thing he says, at least the first half, when we get to Sinai. When he's going to have the same statement at Sinai, and the question is, are the Israelites going to answer it the right way? And here's the training they have to learn the answer to this question. Should they enter into an if then system, a law work system. If you do something, I will bless you. And of course, we'll learn later, if you don't do something, I will curse you. And that's the way a law system works. And so he's going to give them two super easy, easy as can be, anyone can do them, laws after he tells them this. Because remember, next they go and they're out again, they've got the water, now they're hungry. And he said, I will rain down manna from heaven, and bring up quails from the earth. He said, but before they you sent let them go out, Moses, I want to give them two small little commands. And he says, here's the first command. They're not to store the manna overnight. That's the first command. Easy as can be, right? And of course, the implication is there, will they have faith in me to supply tomorrow's? If you have faith someone's going to supply tomorrow, you don't need to store overnight. So they were just supposed to take what they needed for them and their family and their dependents and then not store it overnight. And then the second command was, and on the Sabbath he said, I'm not going to do man on the Sabbath. That's a day of rest. So on that one day before the Sabbath, you can collect twice as much man as you need and hold that half of it overnight. But then he said, the command is, don't go out on the Sabbath looking for manna. Okay, so here you have these two laws. You have one, don't hold the manna overnight, and two, don't try to store the manna. And then the second one is, don't go looking for manna on the Sabbath day. And what did the Israelites do? They went out looking for manna on the Sabbath day, and they tried to store the manna overnight. It turned rancid, got worms. Basically, I think this is, instead of putting the diseases of Egypt on the Israelites, he's basically putting the diseases on this manna. And it turns rancid, and it putrefies, and it causes stink in the whole community, and they fail. See, now what they were supposed to take away from this is, if they can't even do two little commands about how to collect manna, when they get to Sinai with its 613 plus commandments, what should their response be? No, there's no way we can do this. You've already shown us that. These were positive examples of what it's like living in a grace-faith system full of blessing in spite of their disobedience and murmuring. And this one is a negative example. Don't enter into a law work system because you're not going to be able to do it. And I proved it because you couldn't even keep two little commands about collecting manna. And I have a lot more than those coming down the road. Okay, so let's keep going here. So now the other ones we can kind of go through quickly. The next one, he's going to come back to the positive. He's going to have the water test again. And what's there, they run out of water again. And of course they murmur, want to go back to Egypt. Moses holds out the rod of God of faith, hits the rock, water comes out. Grace, faith, system. Then, and this is the last one, Amalek, the armies of Amalek. I kind of find this one a little funny too, because this is the only one where they don't give the response of the Israelites. You know, you expect them to say they started murmuring and complaining, but I think the armies of Amalek were coming down the hill so fast the Israelites probably didn't even have time to complain. And so they need help from deliverance. And what does God tell Moses to do? Go up to the rock, hold up the rod of God of faith, and as long as that's up, with a handful of Israelites, I will destroy Amalek. And Amalek was destroyed. And so over and over and over again, we get this grace faith system that he wants them in based on his Jehovah I Am name, the grace resident in that name. And their part was faith. He wanted them to believe, to rely, to trust, to look to him to meet every single thing they needed met. All right, so now we're at the end here with Amalek. Now God's going to give them a picture, a couple of pictures. And now we are going to go ahead and turn to a couple passages here. So go to Exodus 18, flip into the end here. And we're going to have a really amazing chapter. Sure, a lot of people don't know quite what to do with. A lot of people say it's out of place. It doesn't quite fit where it is. But I think this is a very critical ending. They're right at Sinai now. They're right ready to be in God's presence at Sinai. And God gives them this chapter right before they're ready to step over. And what I think we have here are two pictures of life. The first picture is going to be what the result is of life lived in a grace faith system based on God's Jehovah name, I Am name. I will be whatever you need me to be. And the second one is what life looks like under a law work system. And he's going to paint a picture. Maybe now, maybe it'd be better now with modern terminology to say he's going to show us a video clip of these two systems in action. And then the very next thing, we're going to be at Sinai, and he's going to give them the final exam on whether or not what they've learned from their trip through the wilderness. Let's look at Exodus 18. Let's just note, first of all, in verse 1, that we're dealing with Jethro again. I mentioned at the beginning that Jethro would be at the beginning. That's where Moses started, out with his father-in-law's sheep, and Jethro's here. Now, a couple things to know about Jethro is he's a Gentile. He's a Midianite. So he is not an Israelite, and he then comes to give Moses his wife and children back. When Moses went to go lead the Israelites, he must have left his wife and children with the father-in-law. And now the father-in-law is bringing back the wife and children. Now let's go ahead and pick it up at verse 8. And Moses told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done. Now make special note here that everything that's said in this passage is what the Lord had done for Israel. If we could sum up this, this would be God does all. If we sum up this one, the people do all. Verse 8, Exodus 18. And Moses told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done. All that the Lord had done. The Lord did it unto Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake, and all the travail that had come upon them by the way, and how the Lord delivered them from all that travail. Now, what are the travail he's talking about? All those lessons they should have learned on the road to Sinai. Moses is saying all these things that happened, the deliverance from the Egyptians, the when he cleansed the water, all these tests that were meant to teach the Israelites to rely on his Jehovah name, he put them in all these predicaments that they couldn't, it would be impossible for them to get out of themselves. They couldn't have beat Amalek. They couldn't have cleansed the water that was bitter. They couldn't just make food come out of the sky or the ground. And God did all this. With the grace resident in his name, I am whatever you need me to be. It's a blank check concept. You fill in there what you need me to be, and I'll do it for you, and I will make you into the people I created and designed you to be. Moses is acknowledging the coursework of this trip from Egypt to Sinai. And the Lord delivered them from all that. Verse 9. And Jethro rejoiced for all the goodness which the Lord had done to Israel, whom he had delivered out of the hand of the Egyptians. So now we get the response. When we remember what God's program with Israel, the culmination of it, when it reaches its end, what is Israel going to be doing? They're going to be a light unto the Gentiles, and they would be the source. Through her, God would send blessings to the Gentiles. And now here you have these Israelites who really haven't been with the program here the whole time. They've been murmuring and wanting to go back to Egypt. And it's almost as God doesn't see it. In this system, he's doing everything. And he's shepherding them along through the wilderness and giving them everything they need and moving forward. And now we're at the end of this trip. We're at the end of the coursework on his grace and faith program. In Israel, it's as if the nation Israel, even in that short little stint under this program, is already doing what God intended her to do. A light unto the Gentiles. Here you have Jethro coming, verse 9, and Jethro rejoiced for all the goodness which the Lord had done to Israel, whom he had delivered out of the hand of the Egyptians. And Jethro said, "Blessed be the Lord, who hath delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians, and out of the hand of Pharaoh, who hath delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians." Now, if you just went in there and underlined everything where the Lord delivered, the Lord delivered, the Lord delivered, the Lord did everything, Verse 11. This is Jethro talking still. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all gods, for in the thing wherein they dealt proudly, he was above them. And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took a burnt offering and sacrifices for God, and Aaron came and all the elders of Israel to eat bread with Moses' father-in-law before God. So here's, I guess, the point of this narrative, is that in this grace-faith system, when God gave at the very beginning Moses this I am blank name, this blank check of a name, they could fill it in. He showed them how to fill it in. I'll be your deliverer. I'll be your healer. I'll be your provider. I'll be your conquering hero. And he says, get the idea now. That's what I want you to do. That's how I want you to act. If they do this, it's not them doing it. It's just believe in this system and operate in this system. The end of the road will be Israel being all God intended her to be, a light to the Gentiles. And here we have Jethro worshiping God with Israel at the end of this journey. And the people haven't really done anything but murmur and try to go back to Egypt. Now just imagine how powerful it would be when the Israelites were in sync with God. Well, I won't jump ahead, but let's just keep that thought in mind, how good it would be operating if they were in sync. But here they're not even in sync, and it does, in a grace system, God just keeps shepherding them along and makes them into the people he wants them to be, culminating in blessings to the Gentiles. Okay, so that's the first picture. And then verse 14, I guess it's verse 13. And it came to pass on the morrow, on the next day. And then we get a picture of what it's like to live in a law-based system. And I'll just read down through this pretty quickly, and then we'll comment through there. Verse 13, and it came to pass on the morrow that Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood by Moses from morning until evening. So you know, you get the picture here. There's this long line of Israelites snaking around Moses listening to their, making judgments of them all day long. Verse 14. And when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did to the people, he said, what is this thing that you do to these people? Why do you sit thyself alone, and all the people stand by thee from morning until evening? And Moses said unto his father, because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a matter, they come to me, and I judge between one and another, and I do make them know the statutes of God and his law. They're snaking around. It's an all-day thing. They're in line. It's overworking Moses. It's way more than he can do. Verse 17, and Moses' father-in-law said unto him, the thing that thou doest is not good. Thou shalt surely wear away both you and the people that is with thee. For this thing is too heavy for thee, and thou art not able to perform it thyself alone. Hearken unto my voice, I will give thee counsel, and God shall be with thee. Be thou for the people to Godward, that thou may bring the causes unto God. And thou shalt teach them ordinances and laws, and shalt show them the way wherein they must walk. Do you notice in this section, all of a sudden we've gone from everything God did to now what they do, what they must do. Verse 20, the last sentence there, and work that they must do. Moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people able men such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetous, and place such over them to be rulers of thousands and rulers of hundreds and rulers of fifties and rulers of tens, and let them judge the people at all seasons. And it shall be that every great matter they shall bring unto thee, but every small matter they shall judge. So shall it be easier for thyself, and they shall bear the burden with you. See, that is life in a law-based system. Every minute of every day is going to be taken up with your energy and your efforts to make this thing work, and it's going to take an army of judges and rulers to even try and get something in place. The law system calls on the flesh, and he's got people snaking around. They probably have complaints with their neighbors, complaints with their store people. You know, they have all these issues because they're on a whole different platform than this platform. And if they pick a law-based system, it's going to take every bit of energy they have, every bit of time they have, and an army of rulers and judges to even begin to make it work. And then we're going to take the next step to Sinai, and he's going to say, which one do you want? Did you learn your lessons, or do you need more education? Did you learn this, or did you not? And we know that these are just pictures because what is described in Moses there actually doesn't historically occur for another year in Numbers 11. And that's when Moses does exactly what it says in the last part of this chapter, where he sets up hundreds over thousands, tens over hundreds, and so forth, to set up this law system. And so this is a picture of what life's going to look like under the law, and a picture of what life looks like under grace and faith system. It's almost like there's God is looking down and seeing this, and the people down on the ground are seeing that. It's almost like there's a disjuncture. And God's now, so we'll go to chapter 19, and now we're at Sinai. We're at Sinai. Let's pick it up in verse 3. And Moses went unto God, and God called unto him out of the mountain, saying, thus shalt thou say to the house of Jacob and to the children of Israel. Here they are. They've been brought here for the final exam. He's even going to ask some of the same questions. He's already asked some of the same questions. They had the water test here. A couple of days after that, they had another water test. He's already told them about the law, the if-then. If you obey my voice, I won't put the plagues or diseases of Egypt on you. And, of course, the corollary is if they don't, he will. And he's already given the answers to the final exam. But he even does better than that. The final exam is a multiple choice, and there's only two options. And the very next thing, he's going to tell you which option to pick before you even take the test. So that's, I like teachers like that, right, when they kind of help you out there. They have two choices, grace faith system based on his Jehovah name, or a law work system that's going to take every bit of energy, and they're not going to, they're going to fail at. Verse 4. This is God's word at the very start, before he offers anything, before he gives the final exam. Ye have seen what I did unto the Egyptians, what God did, and how I bear you on eagle's wings. He carried them. You know, the idea is here, the effort wasn't on their part. They didn't do anything. He put them on his wings, and he flew them or carried them to, well, let's see where he carries them to. Verse 4. Ye have seen what I did unto the Egyptians and how I bare you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. That's what he did on this trip. And he wants them to show the power of the grace resident in his I Am name. I will be whatever you need me to be, and I will carry you along, I will shepherd you along, and I will keep you to myself. That's the option they were supposed to pick. But let's read verse 5. Now, therefore, if ye will obey my voice indeed and keep my covenants, then, so we're back to this again, if, then ye shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine, and ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. And Moses came and called for the elders of the people and laid before their faces all these words which the Lord commanded. And here's their answer. And all, every one of them, all the people answered, and they all answered together and said, all that the Lord has spoken we will do. And Moses returned the words of the people unto Lord. And what happens next? He had brought them to himself, and what's in the few verses down he's going to say? Get the people away. Cleanse them and get them away, and anyone that steps on the foot of this mountain is dead. And now we have what we'll be going over next work with what life is going to look like under the law system. And I use the word system here because we're not saying there's no laws or commands in a grace system or that there's no grace in a law system. What we're saying is that with the word system is how the whole thing works. In a law system, you have a command with a associated penalty for disobedience, punishment for disobedience, or blessing for obedience. That's the law as a system. And that's what Israel puts herself under. And we're going to find in the next section that we're going to go over these five courses of punishment that Israel, from Leviticus 26, that Israel's going to be going through. And their life is going to look a lot like the last half of chapter 18 than the first half. But the good news is that it's not going to stay that way. Let's flip over to Hosea. Hosea 14 is right after Daniel, if that helps. Hosea 14, at this point, Hosea is talking about the kingdom blessings as the kingdom is being set up. And at verse 14, we're going to get some information on exactly what they're going to be experiencing at that time. Verse 14, chapter 1. Israel, return unto the Lord thy God, for thou hast fallen by thine iniquity. So here's the iniquity. This is hundreds of years later, and they have fallen in their iniquity. They're experiencing the curses for disobedience in the law. And for thou hast fallen by thine iniquity, take with you words and turn to the Lord. Say unto him, take away all iniquity and receive us graciously. Receive us graciously. That's the answer they were supposed to give. They should have given. God gave them plenty of opportunity to choose at Sinai. When he said, if you obey my commands and statutes and ordinances, they should have said, we will do all that you say. They should have said this. No, Lord, you do for us. We want to stay relying on the grace resident in your Jehovah name. Look how far you've brought us. Here we've been mumbling and complaining and rebellious the whole way, and you still turned us into a nation that's a light to the Gentiles. And you've accomplished all that with us. Receive us graciously, and you make us in to the people that they desire to be. And that will come at a certain time in the future, but there will be a believing remnant that will give the answer, will pass this final exam and ask God to receive them graciously. Let's just write out a couple more verses because it ties in perfectly with what we've been talking about here today. First, he's going to say some things that won't save them. Asher won't save us. We will not ride upon horses, neither will we say any more to the work of our hands, ye are our gods, for in thee the fatherless finds mercy. When you're in a law system, it's your works that get the blessing. And they're no longer going to be relying on their works. They're no longer going to be relying with alliances and surrounding countries. Instead, on verse 4, here we're back to Jehovah's name, I am's. I will heal their backsliding. I will love them freely, for mine anger is turned away from them. I will be as the dew unto Israel. He shall grow as the lily and cast forth his roots as Lebanon. His branches shall spread, and his beauty shall be as the olive tree and the smell of Lebanon. They that dwell under his shadow shall return. They shall revive as corn and grow as tall as the vine, and the scent shall be as the wine of Lebanon. Ephraim shall say, what have I to do anymore with idols? I have heard him and observed him, and I am like a green fir tree. From me is thy fruit found. And when he is wise, and he shall understand these things, prudent, and he shall know them. For the ways of the Lord are right, and the just shall walk in them, but the transgressors shall fall therein. And he's going to receive us based on grace. They will then become in true completion, when the kingdom is established, that true light to the Gentiles, and through Israel and her rise, she will be the source of blessing, God's blessings to the Gentiles.